I suppose now, just being a short time after Christmas, it's probably not the best time for me to remind myself and you as well that, as people say, you are what you eat. And certainly there's some truth in that, because when you talk to those who are involved in extreme physical sports, they're eating certain types of diet in order that they have a certain amount of protein and that they have energy and all of those things. And in many ways, you are what you eat. If you live simply on Mars bars, well, that will tell. But if you live in lettuce leaves, that will tell as well. So we are what we eat. But we're looking today at the word that reminds us that Christian men and women have an inner life, a spiritual life, that needs to be fed and satisfied. Now, the psalmists, those who wrote the Psalms, and the prophets, they used metaphor expression. And in Psalm 42, I'm sure most of you are familiar with it, it says, as the hart or the deer pants after the water brooks. You've got the picture there of the deer looking for the water, very dry, parched. And then it says, so pants my soul after thee. The expression, of course, showing us that the Christian there is longing for more of God. Someone prayed in our prayer meetings a few years ago, I'm not sure which of you it was, we want more of God. And I've never forgotten that expression, and that is what the psalmist is saying in Psalm 42. But in Psalm 63, there's words there that show us the psalmist referring to his experience as a parched land where no water is, and their desire is, again, that the Lord might draw near to them in a special way. Now, we've read the words together there. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst. In the days when Christ was walking among men on earth, food and water were necessities. They still are, of course, but they were necessities, not an add-on luxury. And in some parts of the world in those days, and even a lot since that, there were those who went around actually selling water, and you gave whatever it was if you wanted a certain measure of water and you got it. So food and water, as the Lord talks about them here, this would have caused those who were listening to understand that he was talking about something which was vital. Not just me getting Christmas pudding or trifle after my Christmas dinner. That's a luxury. Christmas dinner was what I needed. Some dinner to keep me healthy. But the Christmas pudding was, well, it's an add-on. And it's something that we could have done without. But the Lord is using words here to show that the food and water that he's referring to is something that is absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. Now, as a Christian, you and I will have an appetite. And if that appetite is not satisfied with spiritual food, then you become sickly and weak. I always feel sorry for, and it's really sometimes all we can do, when you see photographs from places where people do not have enough food, and anyone in their right mind has a great deal of sympathy for those who are starving, and they become sickly and very weak. Some of the most disturbing photographs that I have ever seen have been the concentration camps after liberation, and I don't look at them very much because it makes me bitter and angry, and I shouldn't be doing that, but it does when I see how men could treat their fellow man. And certainly we know what sickly and weak is because of food. Men must be fed if they're not going to become sickly and weak physically. And so it is spiritually. What is one of the first signs of being unwell? Loss of appetite. Someone has a perfectly normal routine in their eating, and then suddenly they lose that appetite. Well, if you're their family or their friend, you'd be a little bit concerned and you think, well, are you okay? Is there something wrong there? You're a little bit unwell. because you've lost your appetite. And so it is with us as Christians. If we lose our appetite for spiritual things, and ministers and elders as oversight, God's ordained oversight of the church, that's all we are. We're not lording over God's work. We're just here because God put us here. But we have a concern, and ought to have a real concern, for all of our brethren and sisters in the Lord, that they would have a good appetite for spiritual things. Why? Because I want you to do well. I want my family to do well in spiritual things. I want you, my friends, to do well in spiritual things as well. But take note that Christians are referred to in the Bible as sheep. And sheep are among the clean animals. And clean animals, as sheep being clean animals, they prefer by far feeding in green pastures. You've seen pigs, and they love rolling about and wallowing in the muck, and sometimes their head is half down into the ground and they're eating, and you don't know what they're eating. Probably all sorts of things, but they're so different from a sheep. A sheep seeks the green pastures. And folks, when we think of all these things that I have said, someone has said that this beatitude is probably the most demanding. It's probably the most demanding because it's really saying, blessed is a man or woman who longs for righteousness as a start. This is just a paraphrase, somebody put it this way. Blessed is a man or woman who longs for righteousness as a starving man or woman longs for food, and as a man or woman perishing from thirst longs for water. So what is this righteousness then? It says, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. Well, if I look at Psalm 106, it's referring here to the children of Israel and their behavior. I suppose they're a bit like me. Sometimes, in verse 13, they soon forgot his works and waited not for his counsel. And if that happens to me, I need to check it right away and get it sorted out. It said, but they lusted exceedingly in the wilderness. Now, if you know their history, they talked about the leeks and the garlic and all the things that they had in Egypt, and they were just content with the right things that God was giving them. It says they tempted God in the desert, and he gave them their request. He gave them what they wanted, but really it was just husks. Because it says, but sent leanness or diminishing or decline into their soul. So, what we are after when we hunger and thirst after righteousness is not some whim of mine, or not something that you seem to see others around you having, but one of the meanings here of the word righteousness is a reference, and you probably know this, is to holiness. So therefore, folks, we want to be very careful what we wish for and ask for, and what we long for, and what our eye is upon, and what our focus is upon. Over in the book of Psalms again, I'll just read what it says in Psalm 81. If you go there with me, please. Psalm 81, verse 11, it's quite sad reading actually. It says, but my people would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would none of me. So I gave them up unto their own heart's lust. He gave them what they wanted. The cap didn't want what he had provided for them, so he let them have their own way. And if you see the word their own heart's lust there, if you look in your margin, you will see that it's referring to the hardness of their hearts or to their imaginations. Man's imagination can be a very dangerous thing. Very dangerous. It can affect us and our families and other people as well. But they give them up to that because that's what they continually were crying for. And they walked in their own counsels. That's a disaster. They walked in their own ways. Oh, that my people had hearkened unto me and had walked in my ways. Look what it says down in verse 16. He should have fed them with the finest of the wheat. Or again, if you look at your margin, it says, with the fat of the wheat, with the very best of the wheat, if they had listened to him, and with honey out of the rock. The thought there is of being completely satisfied. In fact, the verse says that. With honey out of the rock should I have satisfied thee. And folks, what a psalm that tells us that God is able to come along and to satisfy us today. We live in a world with crying out for a whole lot of things. And you and I, as we look at this beatitude today, remember that it does say, blessed. We looked at that before, referring to a contentment and a gladness and a joy that's not dependent upon circumstances. And really that is where we want to be. So there is great potential for every single Christian gathered here this morning. We mentioned holiness, and that was one of the meanings of the word righteousness here. Holiness conforms us to Christ. I want that. And I've wanted it for 35 years nearly now, from I got saved. And I know that from experience that while the Pharisees, they're all just like each other, weren't they? In a whole lot of ways. When God conforms you and me to the image of Christ through our lives, he develops our own individuality. I don't want the same personality as you, or the same mannerisms, or the same way of, I want to be me. There's a man I was talking to on the phone last week, and I said, well, I'm just a cold man, and a long time ago now, the Lord called me to preach. But I want to be me. I don't want to be anybody else. I want to be me because Christ develops your own individuality. You think of the disciples in the Bible. Every one of them were so different from the others. So therefore, even in a congregation like our own here this morning, the Lord is able to develop all of us. Great potential. And your personality and your mannerisms might be needed and used by the Lord in a place where I certainly wouldn't fit in at all, or the other way around. So if we're just content to be ourselves and let the Lord develop us as far as Christ-likeness is concerned, because the word filled there at the end of verse 6, it means satisfied, but it also carries a meaning of being controlled by. So happy or glad or blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after holiness. That's one of the meanings of the word righteousness, for they shall be controlled by it. You live in well when you're controlled by holiness, seeking to honour the Lord in all that you do. And there is no holy living apart from an up-to-date walk with the Lord. There's one of the ladies here. It's a wee while ago now, but she prayed once in the prayer meeting that the young people, and not only the young people, because it spoke to me, would not only have a testimony that they're saved, but they would actually have a walk with God. Daily consultation and communion with God, looking to him, honestly seeking direction from him, weighing up situations to see if we can glorify him there, and an up-to-date walk with the Lord. There's no holiness apart from that. So I want this morning to look at this beatitude, and I've given it to a title to it that you may find is a little bit unusual, but we'll explain it later on in the message. The title is, Do we want the whole loaf? Do we want the whole loaf? I want you to notice here, first of all, when you think of this verse, there is the thought of vindication. Now, we look at the word righteousness again. Of course, it refers to holiness, but it is a word that also refers to justice. And all over the years, right up to this present moment in time, many Christians are willing to live uncomfortable lives. Probably might be people here and you're doing that in your workplace, but you're doing it for the Lord. And many missionaries especially live in very pressurized, stressed lives. And they've got above, which we all must do, they've got above the, I'll look after me. Got above that. And their focus now is on the Lord, and they've trusted God that in time or in eternity, he will vindicate all that they've done, them in all that they've done for him through life. Don't forget that, Christian. think of your prayers, and this is another message. Your prayers are all bottled up. Are they not in the bottle? In my bottle? In thy bottle? Read that in Revelation. The Lord hasn't forgotten. And all of your work that you've done for him. Let's think of what Paul said to Timothy over there. If you turn to 2 Timothy, please, and chapter 2. Sorry, chapter 1. 2 Timothy chapter 1. At this stage in Paul's life, he'd had a really rough time and been battered and stoned, and only for God's intervention he'd be dead long ago. And he'd been let down. He'd been bad-mouthed. He was physically damaged by people. And he says there in verse 12 when he's talking, sorry, I should look at verse 8 first of all. He refers to himself there, nor of me his prisoner. Great attitude. Paul looked upon himself as the Lord's prisoner. Nor of me his prisoner, but be thou partaker of the afflictions of the gospel according to the power of God. Now, he loved Timothy, and he would not have wished evil for him. But he recognized that in those days, in that particular circumstance, Timothy was going to be up against it. And he says there to him in verse 12, for the which cause I also suffer these things. Now, he mentions some things after to him as well. In verse 9, wherein I suffer trouble even as an evildoer, even unto bonds. And then he says in verse 10, I endure all things for the elect's sake. His love for God and his fellow man was never far away in what Paul was saying. And he's trying to encourage Timothy now. And he's saying in verse 16 of chapter 2, shun profane and vain babblings. And then he says to him here in verse 12 again, for the which cause I suffer these things, nevertheless I am not ashamed. And then he says, for I know whom I have believed or trusted, and am persuaded. And that word persuaded, if I can stop for a moment, is a word from which we get the word tranquilized. You take a lion, and it's in the pen in the zoo, and he's got a sore leg, and we need to get him and help him out. Don't be sending me in to grab him by the neck and bring him over. Not going to happen. But if you tranquilize him, you can deal with him then. And the thought here is, I am persuaded or tranquilized that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. So he's not driven to despair by the events of time now. He knows the day of vindication will come. I know whom I have believed, and I'm persuaded or tranquilized, completely convinced that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. I'm not going to take time just now to turn to the book of Amos. But if you look there, you will see that Amos is very disturbed when he sees the mistreatment of the poor, and he sees those who are full of street craft wronging those who are quiet in the land and people who are straightforward. And he's very, very disturbed about that. And Christian, as you set out to serve the Lord in 2022, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if there's stress. Don't be surprised if someone is nasty to you. I hope they're not, but they may be. Don't be surprised if, even in doing your best in your area of the work, that there doesn't seem to be any, there doesn't seem to be any fruit. Don't be surprised if all around you wicked men are waxing worse and worse. Now, that things have got worse from last year. And last year was worse than the year before that. And the Bible says that wicked men will wax worse and worse. We're thinking here of vindication, but please do not despair. We're looking here at the word righteousness. You're hungering and thirsting for that. And it means justice as well as holiness. But I'm just looking here in the book of Esther and chapter 7. And if you're familiar with Esther's story, in chapter 7 now, Haman has everything set up to destroy the Jews, including Mordecai and Esther too. And in chapter 7 here, we see the providence of God. It says here in verse 2, the king, and the king naturally was, he certainly wasn't a godly man. In all likelihood, he wouldn't have cared too much for the Jews, because he signed and he sealed that they would be destroyed, and he sealed it with his ring, and that was something that could not be reversed. So the situation here is one where there has been that legislation, if you want to call it, brought about, and it can't be reversed. And Esther now, she's in despair, and she comes into him, and what does the king ask her in verse 2? He says, "What is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee." Nobody would ever have dreamt of that happening. "What is thy petition, and it be granted thee? And what is thy request, and it shall be performed?" There is providence there, because circumstances have come about that she's found favor with the king, and now she's in this position to request what she wants. So she's there with confidence. She's there because of providence. But if you look there in verse 3 at the end, you'll see she has true compassion. She says, she's referring, "My people at my request. O king, that it please the king, let my life be given at thy petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold." The word sold, you know what it means? It means sold, given away, got rid of, finished, gone. "For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish." Now, it's all wicked Haman's doing. And if you look down in verse 5, "Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, Who is he, and where is he? Who is he, and where is he, that durst presume in his heart to do so?" Where it says there, "the darest presume," refers to whose heart is so, has filled with hatred to the extent that this is what he wants to do. Verse 6, "And Esther said, The adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman." He was there. And you can sense the atmosphere as it turns to him and says, "Him, the one that you have honored, the one that you that got you to put seal what you said regarding the destroying of the Jews with your ring, can't be reversed. And now, king, we are in dire straits. There's no going back. It seems that things will never change." By the time you get to verse 9, everything has turned round to such an extent that Haman, verse 10, of chapter 7, Haman is hanged instead of the Jews, and instead of Mordecai. And if you look there in verse 7 of chapter 8, it says, "Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen, and to Mordecai the Jew, Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write you also for the Jews, as it liketh you, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring." This is an amazing situation. "Seal it with the king's ring. For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, may no man reverse." Now, it's just been reversed, and for the right reason. And everything here is completely turned around. And in that chapter, God's name is not actually mentioned in the book of Esther, but he's working right through it, turning circumstances around and in his providence setting up this meeting in that situation, that glory might be brought to his name, that ultimately not just Esther would be vindicated, but God would be. And men and women, there's a day of vindication for you and I. And as you try to live for the Lord this year, just remember this vindication. Whatever abuse you might get for the Lord's sake, whether it is something that upsets you, maybe you're a quite sensitive person and someone said something upsetting to you because you're a Christian, and that's very common. Or something more serious than that. Or perhaps you're like Esther and you're looking at our province and you're thinking, well, it can't be reversed. Everything's signed, sealed, and delivered. It can't be turned around. Well, remember Esther chapter 7. And remember the great turnaround there. There is the thought of vindication, but then there is, secondly, here the thought of dedication. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. You see hunger and thirst there. Now, I want to mention these verbs quickly. You see, to hunger and to thirst. In very common usage, they meant a piece of bread, or a piece of fish, or a drink of water, or a piece of meat. But in the original language here, strictly accurate, and if we were to look at this in Greek, it means, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst for all righteousness. So our hungering and thirsting, if someone comes along and they're hungry, they want a slice of bread, they're thirsty, they want a drink of water, but the title then is, do we want the whole loaf? Because that is what is referred to here. Hungering and thirsting after all righteousness. Good in some ways, while we don't want to be beating ourselves up all the time, it's good to feel that we've more ground to gain for the Lord. When Paul was writing to the church at Philippi, chapter 3, and in verse 12, he says here, not as though I had already attained. So he's dissatisfied a bit. Maybe you're dissatisfied with your progress. So am I. Not in a morbid way. But we want to take more ground for the Lord and go on. Remember we sang earlier on, I'm pressing on the upward way. New heights I'm gaining every day. I trust that will be your experience and mine. He says here, not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect, but I follow after. The thought there is of ardently pursuing something. I follow after, if that I may be apprehended, for which also I am apprehended of Christ Jesus. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but thus one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind. Sometimes that's a stumbling block for us. Whether he's forgetting here how he was before he come to the Lord, or forgetting his failure to be what he wanted to be. He's now saying he's going to put them behind. And folks, new year, let's go and leave any failure of 2021 where it is. Forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. Now, the word reaching is an important word there because it is an expression that is related to the world of sports. And you take the runner who is reaching for the line and he's stretching every muscle and he's been training hard and he's straining every muscle now in order that he might win the race. What's the apostle saying here? He's really saying that, well, if I could sum it up, he's referring to honesty before God and self. Saying, I need to forget those things which are behind, but I'm going to press on. It's dedication. It's dedication that he's talking about. We sang earlier as well, oh, for that closer walk with God. You know, the closer you are to a light. Sometimes I've been thinking of going somewhere and I had something on that I was going to go out in, and when I got closer to the light, realized it spilled something on it. I didn't see that in the dark or even in the half dark. But the closer you get to light, the easier it is to discern defilement. And that is a good thing with all of us as believers. Paul was greatly dissatisfied with substitute. Remember, he's a sheep. And sheep are not like goats. Goats eat rubbish. I've seen goats eating cloth and paper bags. And I've seen them trying to eat people's clothes as well. Sheep don't eat rubbish. The Bible talks about a dog returning to his vomit and the sow wallowing in the mire. Well, the sheep usually would have nothing to do with either, because a sheep is a clean animal and they want the green pasture, showing us again that we must not just want to strive for holiness, but we must love it. Must love it. And if we do love it, then there will be that dedication. And this will bring a really big positive into our lives this year. If we can seek after the Lord in a way that we're continually hungering and thirsting. Remember the words, the verbs there. Hunger, to hunger and to thirst. Referring to wanting it all. You don't just want a piece of bread and a drink of water. You want all of the loaf and you want all of the jug of water. And in a world that sometimes could have you to be content with just a little bit of God in your life as a Christian, let's be dedicated. Let's be dedicated to the Lord. Remember again what Paul said when he was writing to the church at Rome, and I'm nearly done here, I must finish soon. Romans 1 and verse 11, he says, "For I long to see you." And it's good to want to see each other. I look forward to Wednesday nights and to Sunday morning and Sunday nights to seeing you all, and I trust you do as well. "For I long to see you, that I may impart or give a share of unto you some spiritual gift, to the end that ye might be established." Now, the word "established" there is from a root which simply means to strengthen. Yeah, I've never heard so much talk as over this past 2 years about people milking situations. People milking a situation. Person told me one time that they could hardly walk, so therefore they couldn't come to the meeting. And then someone saw them running up the street into the pub. I was hurt at the time, but then I learned to just give it to the Lord and thought, well, there you go. I wouldn't lie to you, but you lied to me. You lied to me. And there's that kind of milking. Maybe someone believes you and you think, well, I'll just tell them anything and they believe it. But setting that aside, there are people that all of us know right now, and they're genuinely struggling. Struggling in maybe ways that not many people know about. And they're genuinely struggling. Well, the word "established" there means strengthen. You can do that. You can do that. Do you remember when the Lord dealt with Peter and he said, when thou art converted, the word means strengthen. Strengthen the brethren. That's the greatest work. One of the greatest works that can do. Strengthen and encourage each other. The word there says that in verse 12, that is, that I may be comforted together. It's very, very interesting. It means called to one side. It's from the root comforter or advocate. And that's what the Lord God does. The Holy Spirit draws alongside and comforts us and strengthens us together. So, brethren, remember in Paul in writing Romans 1, he was a man who was dedicated. So when we think of this, beatitude, the hunger and the thirsting after righteousness, there's a thought of vindication, the thought of dedication, but then there is the implication. It said, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness." If there's no hunger and thirst, then there won't be these things. There won't be this dedication. And there won't be this shining for the Lord. We can't content ourselves with just a little bit of blessing, because we mentioned earlier, they shall be filled, meaning controlled by or satisfied. But if we don't fill our lives with spiritual things, something else is in there. What is it? What will it be? Rubbish? of the internet or television, or even worse than that, perhaps. And folks, do not allow God's best to slip by for you this year. Don't allow it to slip by. I have to close now with one final reference. It's over here, the book of Hebrews in chapter 2. That'll be us done. And it's talking here about the implication. It's which do we need to, something we have to do. Remember I said at the start, this is probably the most demanding of the Beatitudes. Hebrews chapter 2. In verse 1, therefore we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. And that expression, let them slip, is referring to a river flowing by. Let them flow by. Folks, we don't want to do that in 22. We know what we've heard from the Lord, not just through me preaching, but the God has spoken to your heart. In your own time at home reading and praying. And we know what we need to do for him. We need to be looking for the whole loaf. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after all righteousness. Now we'll never be sinlessly perfect in this life. But one day we will be. And then there'll be vindication. I trust there will be dedication now. And we'll all watch out regarding this implication. We do not let everything that's good and best slip by. Let's just have a word of